Hello, and welcome to Syngenta Growing Golf, the podcast about tomorrow's golf industry today. My name is Gary Firkins, and I'm your host. Today, I'm speaking to Craig Haldane, Director of Education at the Bernhard Academy, training the next generation of golf course managers. In a 26-year career, he has managed courses in Africa, Asia, the Middle East, and most recently, Gleneagles in Scotland. Craig talks about his experiences, lessons learned, and how to create great team culture. We're interested in your thoughts and feedback, so please do join the conversation at syngentagolf.com or via Twitter and LinkedIn. Enjoy the show. Craig Haldane, welcome to Syngenta Growing Golf.
Thank you.
Tell us about growing up in South Africa and your first experience of golf.
Wow. My first experience of golf was with my dad, as most young men will probably say now. Dad was a keen golfer, played out of George Golf Club. I used to invite me along sometimes to play on the Sunday in the afternoon, and give me a 7-iron and a 5-iron, and that was me. I was interested in golf, but I never really got into playing the sport into my mid to late teens, if I'm being honest. And then I really got hooked and suddenly enjoyed it. Growing up in South Africa, sunshine, beaches, rivers and the mountains, are very blessed. It's until you leave that you realize how wonderful it is where you grew up. I grew up a humble home, middle-class family. I lived in George my whole life. I went to school there. I moved away for my military. We were the last year we had to do that, which is a phenomenal year. And then I moved back and studied in Port Elizabeth for 3 years, and then landed up when I taking up golf as a career in golf course maintenance in 96.
And when did you first become interested in the golf course environment, the turf grass environment, and the wider environment around the golf?
I wasn't at all interested even when I started working at Fancourt. So I studied sports administration and marketing, and nothing to do with agronomy. And I needed to do a 6-month work placement at the end of my course to qualify, so to speak. And I'd done some work at Fancourt at the time and George Golf Club, starter on the range, working in the pro shop, these kind of things. And I needed to do a 6-month work placement. So I went to the then director of golf, Jeff Claus, and I said, can I come and do some work with you guys? Parge, American Texan, he says, you welcome. He says, but I can't pay you and you've got to go work with the Greenkeepers for 6 months. And that was it. So I probably only recognized this more recently in life is that that's why I'm so passionate about what I do and so proud of what we do as an industry. When you play a really well-maintained golf course as a golfer and it's a special occasion and you polish your shoes a bit more and there's maybe a new glove and a sleeve of balls, right? That's what Fangled was for us. If you got to play Fangled, wow. And suddenly here I am thrown in the deep end on the crew, and within days I felt immensely proud of being involved in that. And the hook was, I now had a vague understanding of what it actually took to maintain a golf course. And I just worked every hour under the sun, and I asked questions, and I learned, and I was curious. And they basically said, look, you seem pretty keen in this. Do you see a career? And I said, well, I didn't know there was a career. And they said, well, come on board. And I became an apprentice. And yeah, long story short, Cape Town, back and forth for 3 years, block release, and I did my golf course management side of things.
And Fancourt, an amazing place to be at that time. They were building the links, I believe.
Yeah, I arrived there when there were 27 holes, and I left it with 76. So I was quite fortunate. Got to see the construction of additional 9 to make the Otanequisit separately from the Montague, and then became the irrigation and spray technician. And then I was asked by a guy called Phil Jacobs, who was Gary Player's lead architect, apply for the superintendent position on the links. I said, don't be daft, I'm not ready for that. He says, just show intent, which I did, and they took me on as an assistant. They'd already got the superintendent in place, unbeknownst to me, and I was on the full construction and growing of the links at Fangled, which was just marvelous. My dad taught me to drive there with a flat piece of land. Anyway, there I was,
Your dad taught you to drive there?
Yeah, it was the old airport strip back in the day. So I used to go and learn to get driving lessons with my dad. And then, that land obviously got bought by the Platners, and they built the links at Fangled. And I was on my own for 6 months working with the design coordinator, a guy called Theo Geertsees. And I learned an awful amount. I was young, gung-ho, but raw. knew nothing about construction and growing, but, you know, I learned pretty quickly. And then when Kwesi Mentz came along as a superintendent, it was great enough. Okay, he's here. But it was a wonderful experience. You know, that stage in your life, you just, you know, living at home, footloose, fancy free, and just eager as heck to learn, you know.
And what struck you? What were the important lessons you learned at that stage?
I suppose, you know, leads to the, you know, the people side of things, and how you conduct yourself and how to get the best out of people. As a young, what was I, 22, 3, but maybe at the time, you know, I didn't have the management skill set. I mean, what did I know, you know? And it was just, I learned some hard lessons. You can't, raising your voice and shouting and screaming and do this and do that isn't the way to get the best out of your people. So yeah, I made some fundamental mistakes, which stood me in great stead as I moved on in my career, you know, and learned the people side of our business, which is, as we all know, so very important.
And moving on, in fact, you've had an amazing, you've got an amazing CV of international golf resorts and golf courses, most recently Glen Eagles, mm-hmm. But also in Dubai at the Emirates Golf Club. But just tell us a little bit about, you know, where you moved on from Fancourt. What was your journey?
Yeah, Theo, like I said, he was a design coordinator on the Links at Fancourt project. And when that project came to an end, he moved back to Indonesia, where he had done the construction of Rio Bintang Golf Course. And they were building an additional 9 holes. So they had the ocean course and the forest course. So the ocean was an existing 18, and they were building another 9 onto the forest to make it 2 18-hole golf courses. And he had always said to me, while I was working on the links, you know, do you ever fancy an opportunity abroad? And I didn't think much of it. Yeah, maybe. He moved on, and I got a call a couple of months later. So I'm looking for an assistant to come and join me in Indonesia. It's only a 6-month contract. Are you interested? Now, I'd been at Fancourt for 4 years, a full-time job at a great facility. And I don't know what sparked it in me. I just thought, I'm going to give this a go. And I did, and I never looked back. You know, it was... The first week was very, very hard to adjust. And I actually thought, I'm not going to cut it young. It was so hot, so humid, so different. You know, from a young boy who'd never left South Africa to now suddenly be exposed to this environment, it was a bit overwhelming.
Very beautiful place.
Oh, stunning. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. But I just had to get my head around it very quickly. And I was like, okay, this is what it is. It's different, you know. It's vastly different from where you grew up. I was staying in a little apartment, literally above the workshop, self-contained little drive. I mean, roll out of bed and it's literally above the workshop. So it was a bit foreign to me. But hey, it was 6 months, and I loved it eventually. I absolutely loved it. I learned plenty. We would get, you know, 2.5 meters of rain a year. You know, it's very different. And you could walk down the drain pipes, you know, from the drainage pipes. Very, very different. Zoysia grasses, Tafigal, Bermuda grasses on the greens. Again, you know, just, and then I spoke about it this morning in the presentation with the journey on people and characters, you know, very poor part of the world. But my gosh, the smiles on the faces to come to work every day. You know, I was like, this is interesting. You know, this is fascinating. And I knew then I wanted to stay abroad. The contract finished. I went back to Fancourt for 6 or 7 months back on the was then Bramble Hill. They were building another golf course to go and do the grow-in. But I asked them, I said, would it be okay if we just did a month-by-month agreement? Because I'm very eager to get abroad again. So I was honest from day one. I said, look, I'm back now, but I want to get abroad. And through the network that we have, and I reached out, and the opportunity came to move to Bahrain.
And from one climatic extreme to another in some way. What did you find in Bahrain?
Wow. I found that I didn't know enough. You know, I was there as an assistant, fair enough, under a great, great Aussie guy called Steve Johnson, who I learned a lot from. Very, very different culture. I knew who I was. I had an idea where it was. I knew it was up there somewhere, but I literally packed my bags, and I didn't truly know where I was going. Got there, and I'll never forget waking up the first morning to the call of prayer, and I literally shot out of bed. I was like, what's that? You know, and over your many, many years in the Middle East, that becomes the thing that you fall asleep to. You know, it's really interesting. Wonderful folk again, Bahraini nationals. I talk about purpose for work, and the purpose for their work was different. You know, it was to really look after their families, and from a poor village. Embraced me, invited me to the weddings, and culturally just amazing, you know. Florida's a special place. I met my wife out there, you know. She was a teacher at St. Chris. We played touch rugby. It was a great social atmosphere. Expatriate community was pretty cool, and we all, because it's an island, quite small, you bond pretty quickly with people and make some good friends for life. So it was great, yeah, I enjoyed it. But Spalding grass is very, very different and salty environment, very poor water quality. And I became the superintendent in 2003 when Stephen moved on, and I realized that you've got to get some more education. You know, you've just got to learn more about the issues that you're facing. It's not just about cutting and watering and what effect is this now having on the plant.
So this was a big change at the golf club as well.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was just, I was now the superintendent. The buck stopped with me. It got real pretty quick. And you think you know a lot of things until you're the boss. And then, yeah, but I had wonderful support in a guy called Mike Braidwood, who was our general manager, phenomenal leader. I learned so much from him. Great support. Gave me the opportunity to come to events like this and GIS and educate myself and learn. And I've enjoyed I'm still learning. And I'm still learning to this day.
And from there to Emirates Golf Club?
Yeah, no, I actually went to Natal. So Dubai Golf at the time were managing Emirates Golf Club, Dubai Creek Golf and Yacht Club, and Natal Sheba. Natal Sheba was probably the third golf course on the portfolio. Great little golf course, it was probably the most popular, massive membership.
And this was the one in the middle of the race course?
Correct, yeah, we had 9 holes in the middle of the race course, 9 holes on the perimeter, and it was all floodlit. Interesting elements with not being able to maintain certain times because of the horses, and we had to use pure water. You couldn't use effluent water at all because of the horses. So I had the luxury now of going from absolutely horrendous water in Bahrain to the purest water, to a point where it's almost too pure. You know, you strip nutrition out the soil, you had to get a supplement. But and then in 2007, the leadership in Dubai shut down that obviously, but to reinvest into Maidan and make a big development. So I was kind of like, oof, you know, what's going to happen here? That said, there was a restructure, and they spoke to me about the opportunity to manage the Creek Golf and Yacht Club. And the gentleman at the Creek, a guy called Rob Gratishard, to go across to Emirates. And Rob just wasn't eager for that opportunity. He said, look, I don't want a bigger facility. I don't want tournament golf. And I was like, I'm up for that. And we had to sell it to the then CEO, Rod Bogg. And he sat me down and said, my boy, I was probably 32. I was still young, I suppose. I said, all I want is an opportunity. I said, I don't want more money. I don't want anything. Just give me 6 months to embed myself and prove myself to you. And 6 months later, he came and shook my hand and said, it's yours, you know, on you go. And there was a really, really case of getting to know the team giving them some appreciation. And the team were a little bit, you know, maybe been told, managed differently. And I was very much like, what do you think? You know, tell me about, it was foreign to them. Like, what do you mean? I said, well, I've been here, 14 seconds. You've been here 14 years. I want to know what's working, what's not working. And kind of that two-way communication started. And the journey at 2011, I then became director of golf course maintenance for Dubai Golf. And I oversaw the Creek and Emirates Golf Club. And we had a new project in Oman called the Wave Muscat. And I interviewed my old superintendent boss, Steve Johnson, for that opportunity, and he's still there today. So, yeah, it's funny how it works in swings and roundabouts. But, yeah, I think I had, 12 years with Dubai Golf, a phenomenal employer, invested a lot in me and in the culture of that organization. You know, I learned a lot about what I do now through them.
And preparing golf courses for tournaments, which I'm sure a lot of turf managers and younger greenkeepers will be thinking somewhere along the line, that's something they'd love to do.
Amazing. I'd done the Arcapita Seniors Championship in 2005, which was a nice little taster. We were the only grass golf course right in Bahrain, so but it was good, and I got to meet the tournament set of guys and the Gronny team, and you realize there's a lot more around tournament golf than the golf course itself. Look, Emirates Golf Club, the Dubai is a classic. I mean, it came with some massive heritage, and it was the first grass golf course in the Middle East, and the first time Dubai really got splashed on the map, when they brought Tiger over, I think it was 2001 or something like that, and it really elevated the event, and suddenly you're responsible for delivering here. I met Graham McNiven, who is still with the tour, And he came in for the first. In fact, Emirates didn't have agronomy support, and the other tournaments did. So I went to the tournament director, Mark Stewart. I said, well, why haven't I got tournament support? He said, well, no one's ever asked for it. You didn't need it. I said, well, I want it, please. He kind of looked at me. I said, well, if there's a guy that you have in your department who does this for a living and he's seeing 20, 30 golf courses a year doing tournaments, I want a piece of that. You know, I want to learn. And Graham arrived the first visit and, hey, I'd like to meet you. And I just took him out on the golf course and I showed him my problem areas. And he kind of looked at me and says, this is refreshing. He said, normally everyone shows me how good everything is. I said, well, I can do that. I'm struggling here. Come and help me with this. And, you know, any deputy anybody who's worked with me in my career, who's now moved on to their own careers, if you woke them up in the middle of the night and asked them, what's the one thing that Craig taught you, they'll hopefully say that, put your hand up and you need help, you know, and it's never, ever let me down. I do it to this day.
And that's important as well for the golf industry generally, isn't it? To challenge assumptions or to bring in new thought, new ideas.
100%. You know, it's innovation, right? You've got to, if it's not working or if you keep doing the same thing, what's it all saying, you know? Nothing's going to change. It's daft. So, you know, you've really, really got to think differently today, and particularly now, you know, where we are in the world and what we've been through, people's expectations. I mean, we can go down rabbit holes here in terms of conversation. But, yeah, it was really a wonderful time. And like I say, being honest with yourself, self-reflection, and putting your hand up when you need help, you just have to. Life's too short. Industry, we have egos. You know, golf course superintendents, course managers, we have egos. You just got to recognize that and then manage it. There isn't really room for ego in it, because you can be brought down to size pretty quickly. We're working with nature, and things go wrong. You guys provide us with wonderful opportunities to correct that, but you've got to understand how to utilize, you know, the environment and your specific stresses. And I always say to people, just because it worked across the road or on the other golf course on your property doesn't mean it's going to work on that golf course. You've really got to get into the nuances of it all and learn and understand.
So many highlights from your career moving around internationally. What about failures? What's gone wrong and how have you dealt with it?
Plenty of failures. One of my earliest failures was, whilst I wasn't directly responsible because there was a leader above me who gave me an instruction to go and do something, but where I was at fault was he told me to go and fertilize greens in the evening and don't worry, you know, the irrigation system will take care of it. And unbeknownst to me, I then did that. I should have stayed and watched the irrigation system run to make sure the pressure was correct. There was a flush valve open to one of the lakes and the irrigation said, I trusted I had something on that evening or if I went. So you're putting probably urea granular or something back in them days on the greens, Bencross greens. And came in the next morning to a pretty disaster, a surprise. And my superintendent, Greg Leckie, just came to us and says, well, what happened? What's going on? You know, and at the end of the day, he's responsible, right? And it was a very, very hard lesson to learn at an early stage of my career, thankfully. But you know what? They supported it and they supported him. And myself, and you learn some big lessons. Plenty of lessons out there, you know, failures in how I've dealt with situations, you know, how I've articulated certain things, and there's a fine line between being confident and cocky, you know, and I probably walked that line with a fine-tooth comb all too often earlier in my career when I wasn't, you know, just because I worked at a certain place and I was doing a certain role, it didn't mean that I was special, you know. And maybe at times I thought I'm at a good place. Yeah, I'm doing okay. No, you really need to park your ego quickly in this game.
After 25 years, more than 25 years on the golf course as a superintendent and course manager, most recently at Glen Eagles for the past 5 years, you've now taken on a new role as director of education for the Bernhard Academy. You're passing on your experiences, your learnings, and you'll hear this week at the GCSAA conference in Orlando. You've been speaking about developing great teams.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what you said this morning.
Sure, yeah. So this, I feel I've got a unique perspective through no other reason than the journey we've just discussed. You know, literally different cultures to where you work, different language barriers, different purpose for work. And through these through this journey, I suppose, I've just picked up on a few things that resonate and are transferable to wherever you work. And I talk about purpose a lot. And, you know, in the Middle East, I was managing colleagues from the Philippines, India, Pakistan, Nepal, who aren't there with their families, who are working 24/7 on a golf course for the sole purpose of improving their families' lives. So they're there to earn a wage and to work whatever hours that you can provide for them so they can send all this money home. So their purpose is specific. And then, you know, the at work a lot, how do we engage with these guys and how do we make them feel really valued whilst they're so far away from their loved ones and family, you know?
Big responsibility.
It's massive. And so it's humbling, I suppose. It's really, really humbling. And I used to get talk about it a lot now, but it still makes me quite emotional. It's like, you've got such a responsibility, you know, to lead people and help them along their journey. And it's something I've really, really been passionate about. So, you know, I took those skills across to Glen Eagles, and, you know, that was the most rewarding experience. Like I said, take away the tournaments and the Solheim Cup and the seniors, which are phenomenal and great events. We love doing them, and the agronomy and the challenges. But to see a team go on the journey from being in two separate teams looking after two separate parts of the facility to moving it to one team was one of our key values in the organization. And amalgamating those teams, one melting pot, the them, the us, managing that and getting that engagement, starting fresh and showing them a journey, showing them a vision where we want to get to, and then watching that team evolve over that 4.5-5 year period of time to being fully engaged and loving life and being at work with a clear direction and understanding is the most rewarding thing you can do. So you get to a stage in your life where probably the last 10 years I've been doing a lot of these kind of talks and giving back, I suppose, is a term you could utilize. And I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And Glen Eagles has been a great vehicle for me, I suppose. And they've been phenomenal in allowing me that opportunity. How can I reach more people? How can I help more people in this industry develop and grow? I believe wholeheartedly that your role as a leader in turf management is to bring up the new generation, mold them, teach them, value them, inspire them, empower them to move on and hopefully have an experience like I've had.
So this word purpose is important though, isn't it? This idea of purpose, these are not just people turning up on a daily basis to do what they're told, as you've recognized in the responsibility. How do you create that sense of purpose?
It's really recognizing where you are now and what that is and where you want to get to. And then that's the starting point. Like, where are we? Draw a line under the sand. Okay, this is where we are. This is real. This is self-reflecting. Not just as an individual turf manager, but as a team. This is where we are. There's disengagement. People aren't happy. There's negativity. It's them and us, the blame game. Okay, this is where we actually are. In 5 years' time, wouldn't it be nice if we were in a place of clarity, purpose, everyone engaged, everyone coming to work with a smile on their faces, these kind of discussions. Not just from a people point of view, but then from a product point of view. You know, this is where we are, this is where we're going to get to. So I always say a vision is basically what you need. A vision is a dream with a deadline. It's not where you are now. It's where you want to be in the future. And that's the starting point. So once you understand what that is, then it's about sharing that vision with your, not just your immediate team, but with the entire team. It's really got to be driven from the top down as an organization. You know, once the organization know where they're going, then everyone can buy into that vision and understand, okay, I'm coming to work today for us as a collective to achieve that. And then by this time, we hope to be there and we'll reevaluate then and move forward.
Give me a sense of, you know, past visions, if you like.
Yeah.
Projects you've worked on where you've created a vision. Give us a sense of what that might be.
So Dubai was a great understanding. Mustafa Al-Hashimi is the CEO of Wassel Asset Management Group. And he had come back from a trip to the Maldives. And he called us all in. We had a joint management meeting once a month where all the clubs got together. And he said, guys, I've just come back from the Maldives. I went there. They remembered my name. They remembered my favorite food. They remembered my daughter and son's favorite activity. They'd booked that for me already. They were expecting me. They made me feel $1 million for the whole time I was there. And I've now returned. How can we do that? You know, and collectively it was like, it was a case because you need the right culture. The word culture. I said, that's a cultural thing that's driven by leadership. A lot of the hotels do it extremely well. They know exactly who you are, when last you were visiting, what your favorite drink is, you know, those kind of things. So, and that's where this whole journey started for them. And we then, they brought in an external company to come and help us articulate that and drive down to find out what is our purpose, what is our vision. And we then created a collaborative group of like-minded individuals who are on board with that journey. And then we developed the service culture journey through Dubai Golf. And we created a vision which was to be globally recognized as leaders in delivering memorable golf and leisure experiences. I remember to this day because it was brought to life. And we dissected every single word in that phrase and what that actually meant to the organization. And then we gave the team the tools to deliver that through recognizing what the values are, what they mean, and how we come to work every single day to live those values and to improve on the customer journey. And I'll tell you what, the difference over 4, 5, 6 years, we eventually ended up self-regulating it and delivering it ourselves. And we delivered that. We didn't need the external company to come in. And when we started delivering internally, it became extremely powerful. So I suppose I really learned a lot through that 5, 6 year journey with Dubai Golf in the customer journey, which was a great success.
And it would be easy to think that all of Dubai Golf's success would be the tournaments, all the kind of the sparkly things that happen on top and get lots of media coverage. But what you're doing there is giving everyone from the ground up a sense of purpose and a stake in the success of the business.
100% correct. And you know, I always say that the tournament's there for a week a year. You know, our membership are there for 51 other weeks of the year, and that really matters. And the tournaments are phenomenal. I mean, we talk about stakeholders a lot. You know, there's so many stakeholders. The guy that's coming, I spoke about it this morning. I said, how many of you guys know the delivery guy's name who brings your sand in on a Monday or Tuesday? And they're kind of like, well, he's got a name, he's got a purpose. Have you invited him around for a cup of coffee and say, thanks for coming on a Monday or whenever the delivery is? And, you know, those little opportunities to make someone feel valued as a customer, because he's a customer too, right? We forget about that. We just think it's the member or what about the internal customer, stakeholders in your business that provide a service to you, or your customers as well? Yeah.
We said earlier, you've taken on this new role, as Director of Education at the Bernhard Academy. You're dealing with a lot of greenkeepers, superintendents, course managers. What are the big issues that they're facing, and how can you empower them to come up with solutions?
Great question. You know, there's a lot of talk, I suppose, in the industry right now about losing people from the industry to other things. You know, he's left greenkeeping because the pay is this way and you make more money, you know, stacking shelves in Tesco's, for example, these kind of comments. And it is happening. You know, there's a underlying concern or worry about the state of the industry, and rightly so. And we've got a responsibility to improve that. And Jim Croxton and the team at Bigger have done a phenomenal job in helping that journey and helping us get recognized for, you know, Jim's job is to look after his membership and to make them, you know, be respected and understood. And he's right. There's a responsibility, however, on us as course managers and greenkeepers as well. And, you know, what are we doing differently today to change this? And when I ask the question, you know, people generally don't have an answer. I say, okay, well, we can say we're losing people. We can say people are not staying. We can say we're struggling to find. I hear this all the time. There's no one out there. We can't find anyone. No one's applying. Okay, that's the case. come back to that, draw a line and understand this is the real thing is now, what are we going to do to change it? And the, when we get into the change cycle and change management, it's like, okay, you've got to do something different. So I'll give you some live examples. You know, most golf courses in the world or UK certainly will have a seasonal greenkeeper who'll come in for a season, April through to September, October time, to bolt onto the permanent team and help them. And typically what you'll find is they'll come in, they'll rake bunkers and do divoting for that period of time. And I'm like, okay, that was the case where at Glenelg. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. That's how it is. That's how it's always been. When I was here 20 years ago, I had to do three seasons before I had the opportunity to become a greenkeeper full time. So, okay, that's interesting. And then I, being me, I was like, well, we need to change something. We can't do that. No. We can, and we shall. And this is what I want to do. What are your thoughts? We've never done that before. Conversation, and that's just typical, right? Throughout the world, really, the resistance to change. I eventually got the team to understand. Look, at the end of the day, if we have a young guy come in, young girl come in to our world, they're Glenelg. This is wow. We need them to learn something, number one. Number two, we need them to upskill quickly so we can have more hands to do more tasks. And that takes the pressure off you to do it all, because all they can do is two or three jobs. And, you know, eventually it gets sunk in. And over time, you know, we now have a journey where seasonal greenkeepers really get engaged. We've got a lot of a different generation that we are looking at today. They're not scared to try something different, and they want to be engaged. They get bored pretty quick, right? You can now fly through a series on Netflix in an afternoon, right? Back in our day, maybe doing a disservice, but you know, you had to wait till the next week to watch the next episode, as an example, right? So it's a different world. So get them in, get them on the hook. That's your recruitment opportunity right there in front of you. There's a youngster who you got to teach very quickly, yes, to do a bunker section and do it absolutely well, and there's a hard slog, and yes, to do the divoting right, all that jazz, but also to teach him how to go and use a flymer, use a string trimmer, then get on a hand mower greens, hand mower tees, guess what, sit on the right on mower, ride a triple, ride his greens, and like I felt when I was a young guy, and I suppose coming back now, that's the opportunity I had. I wasn't made to just do the menial task, I got to try things and do things, and I loved it. And that's what got me engaged. I said, you're losing people to industry if you're not giving them this opportunity. There's your hook. There's your opportunity. Now, you know, the buzz goes round, and we've been at this place. We've learned to do this. We've learned to do that. And then industry might hear of it. And so the things need to change. And your best recruitment opportunity is to take on the seasonal and get them up. And also, why do you have to have a degree or qualification in greenkeeping to try it? You know, why can't we take a guy who's maybe changing his career path? He's been in the military for 20 something years or an accountant, and he says, I've just had enough, I've burnt out, I want to try something different. Why not take him on board and teach him? Now, you recruit based on values first and foremost, the skills that you teach. A guy with the right attitude is teachable. The guy with the wrong attitude, as it can be the best greenkeeper in the world, but the wrong attitude, it's not going to work out. So there are massive opportunities to take this box that we all put everyone in greenkeeping. You must work weekends. You've got to work these hours. You've got to do X, Y, Z. Oh, you only want to work mornings from 8 till 12. We don't do that. You can't come. No. How can we engage? That suits you and your lifestyle. There are people out now that want a better life balance. We've got to change how we put things in our box, or it's going to fail. We've got to think differently.
What about sustainability as an issue facing golf? Mm-hmm. You only have to look in the media over the last year when we've had a year of climate extremes, either heat and drought or flooding. People are looking at golf courses from outside and saying and challenging the existence of golf and the freedom to operate of golf. What role have turf managers, superintendents got in communicating, presenting golf courses to their local communities where there may be detractors?
You've nailed the communication is the key. It really upsets me, but the realization that, or the bad press, I suppose, that golf courses get for spraying or watering or stuff. You know, when you look at chemistries and the absolute value that they can provide to a facility in terms of plant health, you know, if you get ill, you do your best to manage it to a point where you sometimes just need to take an antibiotic, right? And it makes you feel better and you don't go down the real path of being sick. It's the same in the turf industry. But, you know, in agricultural areas, I mean, you're talking acres and acres of land where they are getting, you know, to do the right thing, to spray things and keep things healthy. But golf, because it's so emotive and there's so many golf courses out there, if you really look at a golf course facility and you look at the acreage that you are actually treating, it is but a drop in the ocean. However, that message needs to start getting out there, and we need support from that perspective. Course managers have a very, very, most, if not all, golf course superintendents get into this game for the right reason, okay? They love being outdoors. They love nature. They love, they're great stewards of the environment by default, in their DNA, in their DNA. Yet, you know, it's a case of they're spraying this and they're doing that. Most, if not all, are there for the right reasons. And that message is also something that needs to get out into play. Yes, we have an absolute responsibility to utilize the resources that we have to its best ability, making sure that we're getting the maximum out of every droplet of water that's going out there, making sure that what we put down, when we put it down, in terms of nutrition, in terms of whatever, is absolutely on point. Looking at mowed areas, do we need to mow as much as we do? There's a journey of communication, as you said before, to manage the expectations of the end user as well. And the end user is watching tournament golf day in, day out. And that's what they see. And yes, that week, the superintendent, I've been there, you've had plenty of time to prepare for that, as you should, and you deliver. That's not sustainable day in and day out, you know, and members' expectations need to be managed too. It's not the end of the world if there's a bit of fuzz on the greens. If you can manage the populations and we can accept 15%, and it's going to be a bit bobbly while we go through this period of time, as opposed to, oh my gosh, you know, it's got to be perfect. Life isn't perfect. But that's a massive job for us to communicate expectations, I think, managing expectations of our own, as importantly, but of our end user.
Finally, your new role as a Director of Education for Bernhard, what do you hope to bring through that role and to help create great teams to provide the solutions to some of the challenges we've just talked about?
Yeah, the vision of the Bernhard Academy is to help professionalize our industry and develop the people within. I talk about having vision statements, a dream with a deadline, right? The dream is to do that, to help people and develop people. Whilst, you know, our brand is out there and they know what we do and we do that really, really well, and we deliver modules day in, day out on setting up a cutting unit and presenting the turf in a certain way through our techniques of sharpening, there's a journey that we're on in terms of helping industry educate themselves on a vast array of subjects, including, you know, soil microbiology, understanding a soil report and what it really means, understanding plant nutrition, and then the management, the leadership side of things, budgets, presentation skills, skill sets that turf managers recognize and need once they become that individual. The academy exists to bolt onto existing facilities that do a wonderful job training our industry. We're not here to compete against colleges and varsities, not at all. It's building a platform and an opportunity for existing course managers, future course managers, existing equipment managers to hang the hat on and say, I've done an intensive course through the academy that has allowed me or exposed me to this, and this. And as we navigate around the globe now and talk to end users, we really are excited about, you know, whilst I think I know what industry needs through having been in that game for so long, it's really important for us to go out and make sure that that is what they want. And, you know, what is lacking and where are the opportunities for us to really bolt on and build these programs. So it's a 5-year journey. You know, in 5 years' time, we want to be absolutely in we're rocking and rolling and delivering phenomenal programs. My job, essentially, is to find out exactly what that is and then build that. Equipment managers today generally come off the motor trade and learn the skill of the equipment side of things through mentorship or someone they've worked on in the workshop, and they've been taught a certain way, rightly, wrongly. That's the way they've been taught. You know, can we provide them and will we provide them, and we absolutely will, a level one, level two, level three apprenticeship type scheme through the academy, where you can actually learn the hydraulics, learn the electrics, learn the reels, and understand the actual golf course. I've got something to say. I've been through a program that makes me, although I'm an equipment manager already, but I've already done something to show I've done more than just that. And that's really exciting. We delivered training at BTME this year, and we've got a partner facility in Moortown Golf Club. So it's a Bernard Academy branded workshop. So we go in there and we support them with some branding, but it's their workshop and it's a live environment, and we delivered the training at the workshop, hands-on training, and it was just phenomenal. And we had so many young greenkeepers, which was inspiring to see, who were interested. And whilst they're not going to be the guys maybe to go and do that, they've now learned a skill. Yes, our equipment was there to sharpen it, but we were talking about how to set up a cutting reel properly, how to understand the angle of a bottom blade, the presentation angle, how important it is to present the plant in a particular angle for them to get sheared off. We talked to them about the importance of keeping things sharp and how a cone reel, exists because of doing X, Y, and Z, and the importance of making sure that everything's parallel, and just things that they just maybe haven't thought about as a greenkeeper. So when they go out tomorrow, they're not going to be racing around the golf course and bumping machinery, and they're going to take a bit more due diligence and care, but have an important appreciation of where it all starts, and that's in the workshop. The quality of cut is so, so, so important to us. Agronomically, less water, less fungicides, nutrition, buys into your sustainable question before, So the academy is on a great journey. We have Moortown Golf Club, we have Norwich, we have a partnership with Leicester City. We're speaking with Gleneagles at the moment in terms of having an academy, so satellite facilities around the country where we can bring people into a live environment workshop. Yes, we've got Haver Hill as well. We do all our distributor training. And then I'm so excited about the management leadership stuff that we're building as well, and the plans to hit it hard in the autumn and start delivering.
Well, Craig Haldane, we really appreciate your time today, and we wish you all the best in your new purpose and your new challenge. Craig Haldane, thank you very much for speaking to Syngenta Growing Golf.
Very kind. Thank you.
Thank you to Craig Haldane of the Bernhard Academy. It's inspiring listening to Craig talking about empowering the next generation of course managers by creating a sense of purpose. Also, the importance of working with nature and understanding the nuances of different environments. As always, we'd love to hear your thoughts, so please do join the conversation. You'll find more industry insights and success stories at syngentagolf.com. Thanks for listening.